Content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Fred Brack reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State magazine. You know which state that one is. Today's reading of Our State is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974 and underwriting our podcast, or this program, for over 10 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. And now we return to the February 2021 issue of Our State magazine celebrating North Carolina. Last time we read all about Made in North Carolina. We're going to get to some more of that today. But first, under the heading, well, it actually is under the heading Made in North Carolina Awards, Home and Garden, Nicholas Nichols Knives in Leland. Built to serve, in a knife maker's workshop in Brunswick County, decking from the retired USS North Carolina is enlisted into a new kind of service as a chef's right-hand tool. And this is written by T. Edward Nickens. It started innocently enough. Nicholas Nick Nichols, lots of Nicks there, wanted to make an iron gate. The Brunswick County native had long been interested in architectural salvage, and he was intrigued by the notion of hammering out his own version of historic gates. But I soon realized that I didn't have any blacksmithing tools, or know the first thing about blacksmithing, he says with a laugh. That led me to collecting old tools and then to selling blacksmithing tools as a side hobby. And just like the storyline of the beloved children's book, if you give a mouse a cookie, one heavy metal thing led to another. At his grandmother's funeral in Columbus County in 2010, Nicholas learned that his great-great-grandfather had been a blacksmith. And that was it, he says with a firm nod. That's when I knew I had to chase this. It seemed like destiny. That destiny has led Nichols to astonishing success as a knife maker. Today, in a garage on an unassuming residential street in Leland, Nichols crafts fine culinary and outdoor knives that have garnered the attention of collectors, landing him on an episode of the History Channel's television series Forged in Fire, and earned a top spot in Our State's 2020 Made in North Carolina Awards. As an aside, the History Channel has audio description, for those of you who are interested in the History Channel, and I think Forged in Fire is one of the programs that has audio description available. In his garage shop, the 37-year-old Nichols moves around drills and saws and stacks of sheet metal with a lightness that hints at the untold hours he spends there. He is big and bearded. You might imagine Vulcan at his soot-smudged Ford under Mount Etna. Except that the other half of the garage is stacked chock-a-block with bright orange children's bicycles, pink children's fishing rods, a rocking horse, scooters, and lawn equipment. Nichols' knife-making fits seamlessly into his other roles as father, husband, and salesman for a large wholesale foods purveyor. Here, he is a few steps from helping with homework, grabbing groceries out of the car, and grinding stainless steel from knife blanks in a bladesmithing technique known as stock removal. There's a certain alchemy required of a knife maker whose goal is to craft life experience, artistic expression, and technical expertise into a three-dimensional object that can actually slice a tomato. Nichols' favorite chef's knives reflect his own long hours in the kitchen. He is a 2006 graduate of Charlotte's flagship culinary school, Johnson and Wales University, and he spent a number of years as a chef in Charlotte and Atlanta restaurants. He prefers taller blades, which protect the chef's hands from banging against the chopping block during long hours of prep work. Most of his knives are cut from sheets of Nitro V, or 5, I'm not sure which it is. It's the Roman numeral 5, which is a V. Nitro V steel, a derivative of 4040C stainless steel, with added vanadium for strength. With a rough outline in hand, he grinds away from a piece of metal all that is not the knife he imagines. He shapes the profile, tapers the tip, winnows away the steel into the distinctive smooth, high, flat grinds that produce hair-splitting sharpness. Somewhere around here is the bucket of knives that never will be, he says. Odds and ends of metal he cut on the way to becoming a knife maker. People see the end product, and they don't know about the blood, sweat, and tears it takes to get to the point of being able to make a knife. For his Made in North Carolina award-winning chef's knife, Nichols turned to a trove of treasured wood for a handle with deep North Carolina roots. The teak is from a restoration work on the battleship North Carolina, anchored in honor in Wilmington, just a few miles from his home. He holds up a piece of teak planking and marvels at his good fortune. Just look at that color, he croons. Look at that texture. New teak doesn't have that. Synthetic material all looks the same. But with this wood, every piece is different, and every piece has its own soul. And the fact that they helped defend our freedom and came from the baddest boat of them all, well, that's what gets me up in the morning. Since he began crafting knives with such storied wood, Nichols has learned how deep the ship's roots are in North Carolina. It seems like everyone's got a connection to the battleship, he says. I've sent knives to Texas and California. I just sold one to a bank executive whose dad served on the ship, and I was just as excited about making a knife as a tribute to her father as she was about receiving it. The battleship teak in Nichols' shop is strong, long-lasting wood, but he sends it out for additional treatment of resin applied under high pressure. He shakes his head slowly. It doesn't have to be stabilized, he explains, but I want this knife to be around when I'm gone. When I put my initials on the blade, this knife becomes a piece of my immortality. I really feel that. Not all of his knife handles are made with historic words from a World War II legend, but Nichols is drawn to materials whose heft comes from more than dense, hard grain. He's procured old Woodford Reserve bourbon barrels and exhibition-grade woods from the Gibson Guitar Company. He has stocks of wood from some of the most famous stadiums around the country: Yankee Stadium, Fenway Park, Lambeau Field, Notre Dame Stadium, and Ohio Stadium, among others. And the story of his own love of meaningful materials ensures that others find their way to Nichols. He's made knife blades from black walnut cut from customers' farms and from favorite pecan trees that tumbled over in yards. He recently finished a knife set with handles made from a family's heritage mahogany kitchen hutch that was damaged in a flood. Part of this idea comes from my chef's training, he says. Chefs use their knives every single day, so they want the best they can find. But everyday cooks are going to use a good kitchen knife year after year, and maybe forever. So why not use something special and something that has story and meaning? And now, again, Made in North Carolina awards, style, Opie Way in Asheville. Heart and Soul, S-O-L-E. A Buncombe County couple is reviving independent shoe manufacturing in North Carolina, creating winning styles like their popular Riverside High sneakers. Written by Melissa Reardon. In a sprawling industrial park just south of Asheville is the Modest Shoe Factory, where Justin and Amanda James design and manufacture their Opie Way brand of stylish sneakers. The place smells of rich leather, Reams of canvas and luxuriously tanned hides are stacked against the back wall. Pieces of footwear, in various stages of development, perch atop several tall tables, and completed pairs of shoes sit on shelves prepped for shipment to customers across the country. An adjoining factory floor houses more than 15 heavy-duty machines used for shoemaking. Justin rattles off nearly a dozen materials that go into each product, and he points to the various machines explaining their roles. One cuts leather, another sews the upper part of the shoe into place. There's a flash activator that looks like a convection oven for gluing, and a press that uses 12,000 pounds of pressure to make the sole stick to the bottom of the shoe. There are special stitching machines and stamping tools which inscribe each product with a model and collection number, much like you'd see on an art print. In between each step is the process. In the process are human hands, those of the Jameses and their four employees, which measure and align all the pieces. Before the insole is placed, each shoe is signed by the worker who finishes it, a personal mark from its maker. I think people have a connection with shoes that they maybe never have realized, Justin says. Although shoes are among the most universal and utilitarian items of clothing in our closets, they also say a lot about our personality, style, and even our social status. Well-worn shoes are beholden to an individual's story. They carry with them memories of experience and paths taken. That symbolic approach to footwear is something the Jameses contemplated at length before launching Opie Way in November 2019. And it carries through in styles like Riverside High, that's H-I, the rich brown leather high-top shoe that won this year's Made in North Carolina Award in the style category. The company's two lines of men's and women's low and high-top sneakers, Haywood and Riverside, are made from either vegetable-tanned leathers that age beautifully or military canvas, much of which is procured from former North Carolina textile mills. I think when you buy a pair of shoes, they should be worth what you paid for them, and they should keep for a long time, Justin says, adding that if customers wear through their soles of their Opie Way sneakers, they can send them back for repair so they can keep on wearing them. When the first pair of Opie Way shoes rolled off the production line, the company joined a tiny fraction of manufacturers in the U.S. that produce handmade sneakers. Opie Way's Chuck Taylor-esque kicks bear the appearance of refined craftsmanship, the sort that comes from decades of experience or an apprenticeship with an expert artisan. But the Jameses' path to shoemaking defies that assumption. Their story began with an extraordinary love of Nike shoes and involved years of trial and error, plus a giant leap of faith. I've loved shoes since I can remember, says Justin, who at 29 wasn't even born when one of the most popular sneaker styles of all time came out in 1988. He got his pair of Air Jordan 3s when Nike did a retro run of the basketball shoes about a decade later. And he admits that he didn't put them on for several days because he didn't want to crease or dirty them. It's changed my world, Justin says of the brand. I studied everything about it, the style of the design, the material. By the time he reached middle school, Justin was intent on one day designing shoes for Nike. He and Amanda, both Asheville natives, met at 15, and Justin's passion for sneakers eventually became hers. I would buy him shoes as presents, she says. I was always trying to find a shoe he wanted, waiting online to get it right when it came out. During their teen years, the two of them would sit and draw shoes together. They operated an eBay store throughout high school and college, reselling rare collectible sneakers they'd find on the cheap. Both attended Appalachian State University. Justin studying industrial design, prepping for his desired role at Nike, and Amanda majoring in education. But in learning about the downside of mass-produced goods, Justin says, I had this weird tug on my heart. Yeah, I didn't like how these large companies do things. Resigned to set aside his dream, he ended up working in marketing. The couple moved to Charlotte, where Amanda taught middle school, and Justin took a corporate job that left him unfulfilled. I had this thought. If I'm not going to design shoes for someone else, then I'm going to make them on my own, he says. So he bought two vintage sewing machines and taught himself to sew. It was a turning point, but where to turn next took some searching. Justin caught a break when a boutique shoemaker in Los Angeles offered to sell his equipment to the couple and show them the ropes. He didn't want to sell to a larger company who likely would have put the equipment in storage just to squash out the competition, Justin says. He wanted to pass the torch. It was exciting, but prohibitively expensive for the Jameses. Then, just as Justin was about to give up the offer, Amanda's grandfather unexpectedly came on as an investor. In January 2019, Justin, Amanda, his dad, and her granddad flew to L.A. to seal the deal. Within a month, the Jameses had signed a lease for their microfactory in that vast industrial park in Fletcher. They named their new company Opie Way for their two young daughters, Ophelia and Wayland. With just over a year of production experience under their belts, the Jameses have hit their stride. When someone purchases a pair of Opie Way sneakers, the shoes are made to order. Over a 4 to 5 week period, Justin and Amanda correspond with their customers, giving them a role in the making of their sneakers. Justin hopes to expand Opie Way production output and the number of sneaker styles, as well as its roster of retailers, most of whom are currently on the West Coast. But for now, the Jameses are happy just to have prevailed. This is the hardest thing I've done in my life, Justin says. If you'd have told me in middle school, not only do you get to design shoes, but they're yours, that would have seemed unbelievable. I'm getting to live my dream. And if there's one valuable lesson that the Jameses have learned during their quick rise to success, it's to embrace the wear and tear, the stains, the blemishes, and everything else that gives a soul soul. For more information, visit opieway.com. That's opieway.com. And now, there were runner-ups. You've heard about the winners, but let's talk about the runner-ups, because these people are important also. The Best of the Rest, written by Anna Grace Thrakill. From a sleek new take on a classic rocking chair to a stylish Blue Ridge Mountain scene in miniature, these incredible, honorable mentions are worthy of wonder. Joe Thrift Violins in Elkin. A handmade copy of Lord Wilton Violin, 1742, by Guarneri del Gesù. In his Elkin studio, Joe Thrift is awed by the intricacies of an instrument made nearly 300 years ago. After learning the method and style of the famed 18th century Italian luthier Giuseppe Guarneri del Gesù from friend Roger Hargrave, one of the best-known violin makers in the world, Thrift was inspired to begin crafting replicas of the master's Lord Wilton violin. Del Gesu's violins possessed a more robust tone than other prized violins from the time. Today, fewer than 200 of his instruments survive, and all are coveted by collectors and players. Del Gesù was a fast worker, Thrift says. His instruments have more character because of his pace. It showed that they were his own. To replicate Del Gesù's style, Thrift had to study for years, learning the look, the wear of the wood, and the varnish. He even checks his creations against plaster casts of Del Gesù originals. And while the creative process of making violins is important to Thrift, he especially enjoys the history that he's maintaining with his craft. The violins I make will last for hundreds of years, he says, keeping the legacy of Del Gesù's original works of art alive. Would you like to buy one? Try JoeThriftViolins.com. Tom Reardon and Kathleen Doyle in Asheville, Pisgah View Mountain Ring. How do you transform one of North Carolina's most magnificent mountain views into something small enough to fit around your finger? That was the challenge that Asheville metalsmiths Tom Reardon and Kathleen Doyle took on when a Texas couple visited their Grovewood Gallery studio and asked them to craft a ring inspired by the sweeping view of the Blue Ridge Mountains from the Omni Grove Park Inn's terrace. To create a realistic interpretation of the view, Reardon and Doyle utilized computer software to layer multiple outlines of the mountain range. There's lots of mountain-themed jewelry, but we work from actual photographs, which give our ring that authentic look, Reardon says. Our ring reflects the real view. The ring is now one of Reardon and Doyle's signature pieces, but Reardon says they can't take full credit for such a brilliant idea. Sometimes we wish we had come up with it because it's so genius. The suggestion to make this ring was just a happy twist of fate. If you're interested, they have a funny website name, but it's real simple. TRKD.com. That's their initials, Tom Reardon and Kathleen Doyle. TRKD.com. Robert Bragg Designs in Marshall, ergonomic rocking chair. After undergoing two major back surgeries, craftsman Roger Bragg decided that he needed a chair to sit in that was not only supportive and comfortable, but beautiful, too. Soon, his patented ergonomic rocking chair was born. The slats themselves ride on each side of the spine, so they're flexible, he says. People tell me it feels like it's massaging their spine as they rock. And I notice in looking at the photograph here of the chair that it has an even number of slats in the back. If it had an odd number, one would be dead center, and this is why with the even number, as someone who has back trouble, I'm interested in this, and that's why I observe this. So the spine must go between the middle two of the three on each side, although there's not extra space there. They're all evenly spaced. The rocking chair, which can be made in a variety of woods, including walnut, cherry, and ash, is a design that Bragg is particularly proud of, especially since it's one that he himself uses and enjoys regularly. I love the exploration I experience by working with wood, he says. And to me, this chair has all the best elements of usefulness and beauty. RobertBragg.com. Anne Harwell, fabric artist in Raleigh, Old Salem Quilt. After an autumn trip to Old Salem's historic cemetery, Anne Harwell knew that it was the perfect scene to recreate for her next work of art. The trees were glorious, colors you never see except for just a few days in the fall, she says. I just decided I have to make a quilt about this. Since 1977, Harwell has been crafting quilts inspired by the landscapes and architecture of North Carolina, from the Governor's Mansion to Dorothy to Dix Park in Raleigh. While her intricate style and patterns were first influenced by ancient floors and architecture, she soon taught herself to make patterns based on her own photographs and drawings. For Harwell, the best part of creating quilts inspired by our state is the endless potential for new ideas. There's a minute when you have inspiration and you're just overwhelmed with the thrill of what could be, Harwell says. That's the most exciting. The magic of Harwell's process is all in the care that she puts into each stitch. Quilt Artisan, Harwell.com. How about the Asheville Tea Company? In Asheville, of course. Elderberry Yaupon Tea. A steaming cup of Asheville Tea Company's Elderberry Yaupon provides a taste of our state from the mountains to the coast. Elderberry has a rich history and folklore in the Appalachian Mountains, while Yaupon, North Carolina's, or rather North America's, only native caffeinated plant, thrives on our coast. It's a blend that encapsulates Asheville Tea Company's mission of creating seed-to-sip tea, with locally sourced ingredients and new balanced flavors. I started realizing that the herbs I was going to buy in bulk in other places, like hibiscus, I was growing in my garden, says owner Jesse Dean. I asked myself, why am I going to buy these things when I have access to them right here? Yaupon's flavor mimics that of a traditional green tea, but it can be steeped for longer periods without taking on the bitterness associated with other variety of teas. It really is special, Dean says. I realized how much Yaupon was being grown right here in the state and in the South, and that it could really bring that local flavor to a cup of tea that is our own. AshevilleTeaCompany.com. How about Mrs. Ruth's jams in Apex? Mrs. Ruth's blackberry mint syrup. How do you provide comfort during trying times? When you're Ruth Taylor of Mrs. Ruth's jams in Apex, the answer is sweet and sticky blackberry mint syrup. With COVID, I started looking at what people were posting on social media, Taylor says. I noticed that people were starting to enjoy breakfast again. Pancake, French toast, and waffles, all delicious treats that are good with syrup. In her recipe, Taylor uses multiple varieties of mint. Don't ask which ones because she won't tell. That lend a lightness to the rich, sweet blackberry, which means that in addition to topping breakfast favorites, it makes a delicious cocktail syrup. I didn't see many cocktail syrups made with fresh components, Taylor says. I especially love making mocktails with it, where the syrup can really shine. In addition to making syrups, Mrs. Ruth also makes an array of creatively flavored jams, often pairing fruits with unique flavors such as strawberry and balsamic vinegar, or pineapple and jalapeno. I love what I do, she says. It's so cool that I can make somebody happy with such a little fruit and sugar. MrsRuthJams.com. I probably won't get a chance to read all of this next one, but it's about Piedmont Distillers in Madison, Midnight Moon Apple Pie Moonshine. When Joe Michalek opened the first legal distillery in the state in 2005, he never expected to meet one of the most notable members of North Carolina's moonshine legacy, Junior Johnson. After they met through mutual friends, the legendary former NASCAR driver called Michalek and asked to visit his distillery. When Johnson first took a sip of Michalek's moonshine, he said, "That's the best damn shine I've ever had." Michalek and Johnson became business partners in 2007 and collaborated on several products, including the distillery's Midnight Moon's Apple Pie Moonshine. I do believe I've had that, but I have no reference source other than that. PiedmontDistillers.com. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Our State Magazine. I hope you enjoyed it and that you'll be sure to listen next time. I'm Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine was underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Our State Magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Comments, questions, call the studios, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.